Hey friend, welcome to Rise and Shine with Emily C. I'm your host. This podcast is all about rising from the ashes of your past trauma so that you can step into motherhood with a fierceness and confidence you didn't know was possible and become a generational game changer. I'm so excited that you've decided to include me on your journey. Together, we're going to rise and shine. Let's go. Hey, hey, friends. Another day, another new episode. I am so excited to be here with you today. We are going to talk about rewriting the stories of your past so that you can move out of your pain and into your purpose, because let me assure you, you may not feel it right now, but you have a divinely given purpose. You were put on this planet for a reason, and all of the crap that was spoken over you as a child is a lie. And so we have to rewrite those stories, because as children, we didn't have the ability to control what people were saying over us or the actions that they took against us that directly affected us. So I'm so excited to have Charlene Madden here with me today. Welcome, Charlene. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
Well, why don't we get started? And just could you share a little bit of your story? What brought you to be a generational trauma cycle breaker?
Yes. It's, you know, when I was following up and doing some research on your podcast, I thought, wow, how, you know, it's sad how many of us have been living through this cycle of generational trauma and how deeply it affects our lives. And my goal in always doing my talks is, if we can just shorten that time period, you know, I would love to eliminate it altogether, but just having the ability to say, you know, like for myself, I suffered generational trauma basically since I was born into this world, but it really started at the age of 3. And it took me 40 years to break that cycle. Mm-hmm. So my goal is just to, if I could save you one day, someone, mm-hmm. one day of suffering, then that is absolutely what my goal is. So for me, my story began when I was 3.5. My parents got divorced, and my dad was a really severe alcoholic, which ran kind of in his family. And when my parents divorced, my dad took custody of my sister and I, but of course he wasn't capable of looking after us. So we were placed in the care of my maternal grandparents, so my mom's parents. And my grandmother was an absolutely amazing woman, super strong, you know, felt women should be independent, educated, and have a good job career so that they could look after themselves. Mm-hmm. My grandfather, on the other hand, was a pedophile. So at the age of 3.5, I started experiencing, along with my sister, sexual abuse at his hands. And this was almost a weekly occurrence. He was definitely a predator of opportunity, and he got that opportunity every Monday night when my grandmother would go out. That was her one night to treat herself. So she would go out to bingo, and every Monday night we would listen to her car back out of the driveway and drive down the road. And then we would wait for my grandfather's footsteps on the stairs as he would come up the stairs. So this created almost a decade of abuse. This went on for that long before it came out. And my sister was 16 when she finally basically had a nervous breakdown at school, and because she was afraid of becoming impregnated by my grandfather. And she desperately wanted to run away. That's, you know, she thought about it every day, running away and leaving, but she knew if she left, that put the full force of the abuse on me. And she was so desperate to protect me in the only way she knew how, which was sacrificing herself. So the abuse comes out. My grandparents get divorced. My grandfather goes to jail for a very short time, thanks to our lovely Canadian legal system that we have up here. And of course, this is in the early 80s. So, you know, this isn't something that's in the forefront and center. There was really no follow-up care, no treatment. And so, like, I remember sitting in a social worker's office, having her tell me at 12 and a half, don't worry, everything is going to be okay. And at this point in my life, I don't know what okay looks like. It's, my life has never felt okay. So I have no measure stick for that. I go into high school, I'm struggling with depression, suicidal ideologies, I start cutting, I'm drinking heavily, I start smoking marijuana, anything I can to numb the emotional pain that I'm feeling. And I get diagnosed quickly in school because I start writing as an outlet, as we trauma victims tend to do. We go on a creative front. I started writing, but it was always dark, depressing stuff. So I got pulled into the guidance counselor's office and spent an afternoon going through assessments. And I got diagnosed after 4 hours as being bipolar manic depressive. So now I had that, what I felt, stigma put on my head as well. So now on top of being this victim, I was crazy. That's how I felt at the age of 15, 16. So basically the, you know, the next 20 years or 30 years almost of my life are patterns of dysfunction, of being going through mental illness and struggling with depression. I left high school. I moved away with my high school sweetheart. We got married, had three beautiful kids, but at the age of 28, I was having a nervous breakdown. I was extremely suicidal. So I left the house. I left the marriage in hopes that I would get myself together. But I realized when I left the house that all I had done was, in my mind, repeated that generation of leaving my kids. And I had swore I would never, I was going to break the cycle of trauma. And I had just repeated it. And it sent me into another tailspin. About a month after leaving my husband, I jumped into a relationship with a man who was as dysfunctional as I was. He was an alcoholic. He was, I didn't realize it at the time, a drug addict. And he was violent when he drank. So I started repeating a pattern of my dad. I started going with a man who was a violent alcoholic and started experiencing domestic abuse. I had a failed suicide attempt in 2002, which led me to moving across the country. Which is what my mom had did when she left my dad. So I repeated that generational cycle of running away, thinking that my problems would be solved. My ex-partner, or my partner, moved along with me 6 months later, and I spent another decade in violence and trauma and alcoholism and just complete dysfunction until he left the relationship in 2015. And 2.5 months after he left the relationship, I had a police officer show up at my place of work where he knew where I would be because he had dealt with a domestic violence case that we had. And he took me outside and informed me that my ex-partner had committed suicide. And it kind of sent me into a tailspin where I just didn't want to be. I had already felt like I didn't want to be there, living in life. And it just reinforced how unhappy I was and how I felt so unloved and no one wanted me and no one was willing to stay with me. And these were all the messages, the stories that I kept telling myself. And I really hit a breaking point in 2016, where I had actually gone ahead and made a decision to end my life. And 2 weeks before that date that I had set, I was invited to a women's workshop. And I didn't want to go, but I wanted to support the person who invited me. So I went along and everything changed for me. I heard three amazing speakers who talked on the three areas of my life that I had struggled the most with, self-love, self-acceptance, and self-responsibility. And the last speaker spoke about living his life. It was a gentleman as an alcoholic, a drug addict, being a violent, well, not violent alcoholic, but having his marriage fall apart, and how he had tried, spent a year to find a perfect mix of pain medication and alcohol so he could discreetly commit suicide, make it look like an accidental overdose. And just as he was about to overdose, he heard a voice in his head that said, no, not like this, there's more. And he got help, got clean, got sober, got therapy, and his life changed. And now he was going around sharing his stories. And it was kind of in that moment after hearing those three speakers going like, what is going on? Like, why am I here hearing these three stories that I so desperately needed to hear? And I realized that in that moment, I was being introduced to my purpose. And my purpose was that, yeah, I had experienced a lot of crap in my life. And it was, you know, a couple of years after going back to my childhood that the abuse came out, that, you know, I found out that my mother had been sexually abused and raped by her father as well. So my grandfather, so he had abused her and then he had abused us. So I realized, you know, how much that generational cycle had impacted my life. And I realized that I could have one of two things happen. I could make a decision to just keep living for whatever short period of time it was going to be, because that workshop was only 2 days before the day I had set to end my life. And I actually showed up to that workshop with my hunting rifle in the backseat of my car, so that Monday morning I could go and end my life. And as I sat there in that seat, listening to those stories, and really for the first time, I think being quiet enough and still enough in my mind, I heard the messages, and the messages was, yeah, things had happened, but you have one of two choices. You can take this and use this for good, or you can continue to let it destroy your life and the lives of your children. Because ultimately, if I ended my life, I was abandoning my kids again, but in the most ultimate way. And I was so desperate to break that cycle one way, you know, or the other. So I made a decision sitting in that seat that Saturday evening that I was going to step into my purpose. I was going to choose life, and I was going to talk about all the things I had struggled with. I was going to talk openly about my childhood sexual abuse in order to help break the stigmas. I was going to talk openly and honestly about my mental illness and being suicidal for, you know, 30 years of my life in order to help break the stigma. And I was going to talk about the importance of recognizing generational trauma, but also stepping into the power of being able to stop it, that we are all just one decision away from being able to stop the cycle. And that decision is embracing our purpose, stepping into the life that we deserve to live. And that's why, you know, I love to come on these podcasts and speak about these topics.
Yeah, I think it's really important. For a long time for myself, I was waiting for someone to rescue me. I was waiting for the system that was set up. This is the story, the justice system, or the family developmental services, whatever it's called, to step in and be the voice that I couldn't be as a little girl. To be the authority that I couldn't be as a little girl. And I think you've probably had this same experience. Somebody help me. All of these adults around you, and nobody stood up. Nobody, I don't know if it's fair to say they didn't care enough, or whatever it was, they didn't do the things necessary to rescue the child.
Yeah.
So it took me a really long time to realize that nobody is going to rescue me. I have to rescue myself.
Yes. Yep.
I have to do the things that need to be done to heal the wounds. I have to do the things, or you have to do the things to heal the emotional wounds.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's, you know, one of the things, like I do coaching now. So I work one-on-one with women. And I mean, one of the biggest things that I teach them is self-responsibility. Mm-hmm. You know, as you were starting off the conversation, you talked about stories. And I think, yeah, we have this fairy tale in our minds of, you know, especially little girls, of this knight in shining armor coming in and rescuing us, of saving the day, when we don't realize that all along we are that knight in shining armor. We are the person that's going to come in and save ourselves. And it's such an empowering decision. Like when we think about it, like as victims of trauma, so much of it is our power has been taken away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so amazing when you actually reclaim that power, and reclaiming mm-hmm. that power is making the decision. It's mm-hmm. like, I mean, recovery can be as simple. We tend to make it this, you know, really complicated thing, but it's really not. It's as simple as just making a decision
mm-hmm.
that today I'm going to focus on loving me. I'm going to accept the parts of me that may not be perfect, the parts of me that are dark and that are broken. I'm going to accept those parts of me. And I'm going to make the changes necessary to improve my life. I'm not going to wait on anybody else to do it, because, you know, I could have blamed all of my trauma. I could have blamed the decade of sexual abuse. I could have blamed, you know, my mom for not, you know, in my mind, not being there and not protecting me when I went to live with the man who had done mm-hmm. the same thing to her. I could have blamed my partner for a decade of domestic violence. But there comes a point in time where you have to go, guess what? I'm making the decisions now. So I mm-hmm. have to get, you know, radically honest and go, okay, that's my choice to live in dysfunction or to not live in dysfunction. Mm-hmm. And if I'm making the choice to live in dysfunction, that's on me now. I have to claim that mm-hmm. responsibility. I can't blame anyone anymore, because we now have the ability to make the choices. We are in control of that. And sometimes it's just finding the right tools, the right coping mechanisms to help us move in that right direction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a line in the sand when you're a small child and you don't really have a whole lot of control. You're a little bit stuck in the situation. You're the one being bounced around, and you kind of have to do your best with what you've been given.
Yeah.
But once you start making your own decisions and living your life day to day to day to day with your own choices, it's your choice to continue the cycle that you grew up in. Mm-hmm. It's your choice to stop.
Yeah.
And you might be listening thinking, well, no, Emily, it's not that easy. Actually, it is.
Yeah.
It's a choice. And you have so many tools at your fingertips. And I'm not talking about the system, because I think we all know the system was not meant to heal. The system was not meant to help. The system is just formality.
Yeah.
There are so many women, myself and Charlene and many of the other guests that have been on the Rise and Shine with Emily C podcast, that are standing up and extending our hands, waiting for you to take hold. And we are there. We've walked the same, we've walked a similar path. I can't say the same path because everybody's path is unique. Everybody's story is unique.
Yeah.
We're waiting. We're waiting for you. We're there is nobody better and more qualified to help you walk this journey of reclaiming your power and stepping into your purpose than somebody who's doing the same thing. We're just a couple steps ahead of you. That's it. Just a couple steps ahead of you. So, Charlene, what were the first few steps after you made that choice, sitting in the chair at that workshop? What were the first few steps that you took to reclaim your power?
Yeah, I say, because this is what I teach the three S's. So self-love, I realized that still, and I mean, I'm talking, I was 44, you know, so I was halfway through life. And I realized that I had to stop relying on everybody else to love me. You know, still I was, you know, still nursing that little inner child that just wanted someone to love her. And I realized that that someone I was looking for was right here. It was already there. I was the person that was going to be able to love myself. And I made the decision that if I was the only one who loved myself, which I mean, realistically, I knew I wasn't, but if I was the only one, that was going to be enough for me. Mm-hmm. And I had to come to terms with that. And it was empowering because I knew I would always be there for myself. You know, I knew, you know, I always say my track record for surviving hard days was 100%. Now I didn't, some days I didn't think I was going to get through those days, but I did, I got through it. And I knew that I was always going to be there to lift myself out of whatever I was going through. So, you know, I really developed that self-love. And like I said, I got really honest with myself. I looked at the relationships that I had, not just with myself, but with other people. And I realized that I needed to start doing self-care. And part of that self-care meant eliminating relationships in my life that weren't healthy. And it's a really difficult thing to do, but it is also, again, one of the most empowering things that you can do, you know, and we don't have to come out and have conversations of, hey, I can't hang out with you anymore. It's just as simple as slowly just not contacting people, right? Because those people won't usually even notice that you're not around, unfortunately. So doing, you know, the self-love, the self-care, again, accepting the parts of yourself that, you know, aren't perfect. I knew I had made a lot of mistakes. And for me, I looked at how I was as a parent. And of course, I relived all that guilt of not being the PTA mom that I thought I was supposed to be growing, you know, with my kids growing up. And I embraced a concept, and that was I gave myself grace with the understanding that I did the best I could with the tools that I had at the time. I may not have been perfect, but I really did the best that I could. And I came to that conclusion as I was sitting in a social services office regarding my oldest daughter, because she also experiences mental health struggles, and having her yell at me about, you know, across the table about what a terrible mom I was. And instead of, you know, feeling defensive about that, going, you know, she is right, I wasn't, you know, releasing the shame of she's right, but I did the best I could at the time. And then leaving that meeting and going, almost have an epiphany out in the parking lot of going, wait a minute, if I am willing to give myself the grace of saying I did the best I could with the tools that I had, I have to give that grace to the other people in my life. And this is a really tough thing for a lot of people to even think about. I had to look at my mom for, you know, the choices that she made that caused what happened to me. And I had to go, you know what? My mom did the best she could with the tools that she had. And yeah. even going so far as to look at my grandfather and go, I don't know what his childhood was like. I don't know what happened to him to create the man that he became.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe he did the best he could with the tools he had.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really difficult, you know, concept to embrace. Mm-hmm. But by giving that grace out, not just to myself, but out to the world, it took such a burden off of me. Mm-hmm. And it released me from hanging on to all that anger, because it wasn't doing anything other than destroying my life.
Yeah.
So, and like you were saying, like, I'm a firm believer that, you know, I do a lot of neuro-linguistic programming work. And I mean, one of the principles is that you have all the resources that you need already within you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, when you think of everything you've gone through and you've experienced, it has broken some people beyond repair. So if you are able to, you know, get up and get, you know, go through your day, you're stronger than a lot of people. So just embrace that strength and know that you can take that strength. Those are just like little embers that are inside of you that you can just fan so that they become this flame, right? Fan that flame of recovery and evolution and transformation mm-hmm. in your life. So.
Yeah, I am a firm believer of you can't change what you don't acknowledge. So going through and asking yourself all of those questions, do I love myself? What, like, where am I right now, honestly? And where do I want to be? And then what do I do to get from here to here? And it's all in the baby steps. Absolutely. Small, consistent baby steps, one day at a time.
Absolutely.
And then also realizing what you were saying about giving yourself, but also other people grace. It was the biggest game changer for me when I realized that the people who I grew up around, they were all dealing with their own crap. Like, what happened to their life didn't just start when I came in, entered the scene. Their life, they were well on their way. They had already experienced so much life before I was even a thought. So as difficult as it can be, giving them grace, that doesn't mean that you're saying what they did was okay. Don't mistake what we're saying. It doesn't invalidate your feelings. What it does do is make them human. They're human. They make mistakes. I make mistakes. You make mistakes. We all make mistakes. That's part of living. But grace and kindness and boundaries.
Yes.
Boundaries are huge. If
with
someone
yourself, with yourself
with
as
yourself,
well. Yeah, we always yourself, think of boundaries as being with other people, but you have to set boundaries within yourself. So
with yourself mm-hmm. and with other people.
Yeah.
There's a whole podcast right there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We think when I say we think of, you know, eliminating toxic people out of our lives, I was one of those toxic people, right? That I was looking at, I had to change the, you know, cutting that toxic relationship. I had to go, I need to create a whole new relationship within myself. Mm-hmm. I need to, you know, and one of the things I always teach my women is, you know, asking yourself, what would someone who loved themselves do? mm-hmm. you know, in this position, if you feel like I don't love myself, because, you know, I didn't in the beginning, mm-hmm. I just asked myself, okay, I may not love myself enough right now, but what would someone who did love themselves do? Because mm-hmm. if you can't see yourself in that, just see yourself as, you know, that whole fake it till you make it, I guess, right? It's like, okay, when I get there, how will I want to be, you mm-hmm. know, and start living your life as that person. So.
Yeah. Do you have anything that you would like to offer our listeners today?
Number one, I always like to leave a podcast with a message that if you are feeling stuck, if you're feeling alone in a dark place and you feel like you don't have anyone else to reach out to, because I know I felt that way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I worked with psychiatrists who had never suffered from mental illness. So they really had no idea how mm-hmm. I felt. So those sessions never lasted long, but if you are feeling lost and alone and you feel like you have no one to reach out to, please message me on Facebook, you know, mm-hmm. find me on Facebook, send me a message. I always tell people I will sit, and it's generally virtually because we're all so spread apart, but I will come and sit virtually with you in the dark for as long as you need me. I will hold space for you to just be you until you're ready to rise up out of that. Mm-hmm. Because I, you know, feeling all alone and no connection with someone who understands is devastating for life. So I just want people to know that you're not alone ever. As long as there's the internet, you message me and I'm available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I don't care what time zone you're in, what time you go wake me up, I will be there to sit with you. So, and if you just want to reach out to chat, to share your experiences, to share, you know, say, hey, I heard this, I heard you on this podcast, you know, whatever, if it has created any impact for you, I would love for you to reach out and just let me know. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Charlene. I have really enjoyed our conversation. And we will talk soon.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Rise and Shine with Emily C. Before you go, make sure to like, comment, and subscribe to the podcast so you get notified when new episodes go live every week.